Welcome to another episode of the Debora Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. The conversation continues with cardiologist Rhys Rojas Marte, MD, about living with pulmonary hypertension, a medical condition that can have full body impacts if not recognized early and treated appropriately. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. We're continuing our discussion of pulmonary hypertension with Debora cardiologist Dr. Rhys Rojas Marte. Cascade is a word that comes up a lot when we talk about cardiac conditions that have gotten out of hand. There are many forms and many causes of PH, or high blood pressure in the lungs, and a missed diagnosis or treatment opportunity along the way can have a domino effect on its development and progression, and its eventual effects on other organ systems. A bunch of diseases can cascade into pulmonary hypertension, and if not correctly identified and appropriately treated, PH can cascade into more complications.
Pulmonary hypertension, the most dreaded complication of it is the right-sided failure. The right side of the heart becomes unable to pump the blood forward. And basically, if the right side of the heart is not pumping well, then the cardiac output, or the amount of blood that the heart pumps per minute, gets compromised. The heart is divided in two parts, right ventricle and left ventricle, and they are connected in series. The left ventricle is fed by the right side, by the right ventricle. So if the right ventricle is failing, it's not pumping the blood adequately, then the left ventricle will not get enough blood to be pumped to the whole body, to perfuse or supply the whole body with blood, with oxygen. So that is the problem, that the left side function depends on the right side function. Once patients have right ventricular failure, then the prognosis is very poor. In some studies, it's been shown that when patients with pulmonary hypertension develop right ventricular failure, the life expectancy could be as low as 50% over 2 years. It is that bad, and that's what we try to prevent in patients with pulmonary hypertension, because it's definitely preventable.
So early detection, critical.
Exactly.
So what do you do when you detect it at the different stages of progression then? How do you treat? How do you manage? What's in the toolbox?
Management depends on the type. For group two, or heart failure related, is just focusing on heart failure. We have a number of medications that we use for heart failure. Depending on the type of heart failure, we might have more drugs than other types. There is at least 5-6 medications that we use for that. And then obviously there are procedures, devices, depending on the specifics of the heart failure. Is there a need for a CRT device for rhythm abnormality and the heart beating out of sync? Is there any valve problem? Is there a need for a valve procedure, percutaneous, like a mitral clip, tri-clip, or surgical procedure? Is there a need for like a bodystem, CCM? There's a lot of devices depending on the degree and how advanced is the heart failure. But we always start with medications and lifestyle changes and monitoring salt intake, monitoring the weight loss. Those interventions help with the earliest stages of heart failure, and that prevents the condition from progressing into more advanced stages and development of pulmonary hypertension. When we're dealing with chronic lung diseases like COPD, for example, ILD, then it's key to treat the underlying condition, to take care of the COPD. Usually the pulmonologists help us with that, with the inhalers, the bronchodilators for those. But maybe the most important intervention is making sure that the oxygen levels remain stable, remain above 88. So oxygen supplementation is something that is frequently necessary in these patients, because that is the cause of the pulmonary hypertension in the first place. And nowadays, since approximately 3 years ago, there is a medication available. It's an inhaler that helps us take care of pulmonary hypertension related to ILD specifically, or interstitial lung disease. That's what ILD stands for. So that is one tool in the toolbox for that group, but the main treatment focuses on preventing low oxygen levels and taking care of the underlying conditions. For chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension, there is a medication as well that we can use, but we always try to identify patients who would benefit from removing the clots. That's one of the only conditions in the field of heart failure that can be cured completely. Because this is an obstructive disease. This is a mechanical problem that if we remove those clots, the patient can have the condition resolved completely in most patients. So it's very important to identify those patients who have chronic pulmonary embolism, because that there can be a procedure that could improve their condition significantly. There are other interventions performed via catheter for patients who are not candidate for surgery. And those patients who are not candidate for either, or those who have residual disease, or sometimes in preparation for those more aggressive procedures, then we use the medication to help them. And then for group one, again, I leave it for last because it's the most complex. We have a number of medications. There are four pathways that we target. And those medications we include on drugs like sildenafil, tadalafil, ambrisentan, macitentan, prostacycline medications that can be in the tablet forms, subcutaneous, IV. There are different formulations and ways of administering those medications. And there's even a fourth pathway, a new medication that came to the market about 2 years ago. It's called sotatercept. It prevents the proliferation or the changes that happen inside of the arteries that lead to the development of PAH or pulmonary arterial hypertension. So we use different combinations of these four medicines. Sometimes we have to add a third, even a fourth, or an IV to take care of it once we get to a severe stage of the disease. And then the ultimate treatment of these patients with pulmonary hypertension, especially groups one and three, when nothing else works, is a lung transplant. It's something we try to avoid as much as possible, but it's also important to identify patients before it's too late, when they need to be evaluated for that.
When you're removing the clots, how does that happen?
That is done usually by a cardiothoracic surgeon, a heart surgeon. It's a very aggressive procedure, but in the right hands, it can be very safe and effective. Usually they open up the chest first and then go into the arteries and open those arteries and just peel it off. You can literally just peel off the fibrotic tissue. At that time, it's not a blood clot anymore. It becomes a very dried and like whitish fibrotic tissue that the surgeon just peels off. And then they just close the arteries, the vessels again, and now without the obstruction. It can be a curative procedure because if they are successful at removing all the clots or all the material, then that can resolve that obstructive limitation and the blood can flow freely again.
But when you talk about chronic embolisms, it sounds like this could come back.
It could, definitely. And that's why patients have to be on lifelong anticoagulation, blood thinners, to prevent them from having these episodes again. Because obviously, nobody wants to go through that procedure again. You know, the complications, it's not a walk in the park. It has great benefits. But we should always try to prevent someone from having to go through it again.
Now, all of these meds that you named, side effects?
Anything has side effects, any medications. Depending on the type of pulmonary hypertension, there could be specific side effects. But that's why we always work closely with patients and have open channel with them to communicate. And if we see any side effect that is prohibitive, then we just stop the medication. Although many of these drugs have certain side effects, especially the ones for PAH, they can cause side effects just from increasing the blood flow in the body, like headaches, flushing, and nausea. And usually the body just gets used to them. We usually tell the patients to get symptomatic treatment. If they have a headache, they take acetaminophen. If they have, let's say, diarrhea, take Imodium. Unless the symptoms are persistent or very severe, we just ask them to stay on the medication because usually the body just gets used to those side effects and they resolve eventually. But if it's something more significant, like liver damage or the liver enzymes go up, we just stop the medication, and usually those side effects resolve once we remove the medication.
I'm assuming that lifestyle modifications are not enough. once you determine there's pulmonary hypertension.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. So once you have pulmonary hypertension, it's because there is a lot of damage that's happened in any of the organ systems that have led to it. The lungs, the heart, blood clots. So lifestyle modification is, it's always important to prevent these conditions from, especially when it's related to the heart, because of how dependent heart failure is from other conditions that are modifiable, like diabetes, high blood pressure, and at the same time, those are dependent from lifestyle habits, like salt consumption, sweets, etc., weight loss. But once someone has pulmonary hypertension, then there is no way of taking care of it just by doing lifestyle modification. We have to use pharmacologic and sometimes even more aggressive interventions.
But in terms of then the lifestyle modifications that you would add onto managing the situation, what's good to do and what is bad to do?
In general, physical activity is good. Always recommended for patients with pulmonary hypertension to stay active. Obviously, if they have low oxygen, if they have hypoxia, which is the presence of low oxygen in their bodies, they have to be mindful of that. It's important that they monitor the oxygen levels with an oximeter, one of those monitors that you can buy online. It's completely fine. And report to their physicians, their pulmonologists, if the oxygen dropped and they need more oxygen supplementation. But it's important to maintain an active lifestyle. Many times we use rehab programs like pulmonary rehabilitation, cardiac rehabilitation, to help the patients and build up their exercise tolerance. And these are controlled settings. Exercise physiologists and people are, other people are watching the patients, monitoring them, the heart rate, the oxygen levels. So this is a great start for someone who has the condition and hasn't been active and they want to get back and but are afraid. We usually refer them to these type of programs because it's a monitored setting. They know how far they can push patients. And then once patients complete these programs, they know how much they're able to do based on their experience with the program. Other types of lifestyle changes, weight loss always helps. Managing salt intake, if they have a high blood pressure, if they have heart failure as the cause of pulmonary hypertension, watching what they eat, the amount of salt, losing weight, and sugar. If they are diabetic, pre-diabetic, it's always important to control what they're eating.
The surgical advanced therapies, any others that you haven't touched on that would work or help in severe cases?
Unless it's related to advanced heart failure, once someone is at a level of advanced heart failure, that means that medications don't work anymore to help patients stay out of the hospital or improve their symptoms. Once someone gets to that point, then we have to start talking about advanced interventions like LVADs, heart transplant. But that is a very last resort in that particular type of pulmonary hypertension. In the other types, as I mentioned before, especially for groups 3 and group 1 or PAH, lung transplantation is the last resort as long as patients don't have any other major issues that would prevent them from being a candidate for that.
What happens to other organs in the body if pulmonary hypertension is not treated?
Great question. So once pulmonary hypertension ensues and right ventricular failure develops secondary to that, if you think of the blood going around the body, the blood from the right ventricle goes into the pulmonary arteries, and from pulmonary arteries goes to the left side of the heart. If we go backwards, the pressure in the pulmonary arteries backs up into the right ventricle, and that causes the right ventricle to enlarge and fail. And then the vessels that bring blood back into the right ventricle are the inferior vena cava and the superior vena cava. But the superior vena cava, it's above the heart. So due to gravity, usually we don't have congestion or fluid buildup because there's more pulling to the lower parts of the body. So the organs that are connected to the inferior vena cava, like the liver is the first organ, they get the liver gets that backing up of the pressure from the pulmonary arteries to the right ventricle, now into the liver, patients can develop liver cirrhosis. because of that. And then as the pressure continues to back up into the other organs, then patients can develop swelling of the stomach or the belly, and then basically of the intestines get swollen and fluid builds up in the abdomen. That's what we call ascites when it becomes significant, especially if the patient has developed a liver disease already. Now there is a component of liver cirrhosis. The ascites is twofold because of heart and the liver. And then as the pressure continues to back up into the other organs, then the kidneys can get affected as well, because now the kidneys are not able to drain blood back into the body because of that backing up of the pressure. Once the pressure backs up into the liver cirrhosis can develop, and that ultimately causes ascites, and the right ventricular failure causes ascites by itself as well. The high pressure can affect the kidneys, and that affects the kidney function in the long term. And then as the pressure continues to back up into the legs, then patients can develop significant, like massive swelling of the lower extremities.
How long would this whole process take, what you just described?
Years, usually. That doesn't happen over a couple of months or over 1 year, for example. There are cases that are more severe, but usually it takes several years for this to develop. The longer patients stay with the condition, the more severe the symptoms. We might get someone who has some degree of like a kidney disease, but they have maybe liver congestion, but they don't have cirrhosis yet. So it all depends on how long the patient has been living with this condition untreated.
Whatever you find at whatever point they come in and this gets picked up, you will have to treat it a different way, looking at your toolbox of all these different therapies and possibilities.
Exactly. Yes.
So new advancements?
Given that there are multiple different groups of conditions, each one has its own advancements and research. For example, in the field of pulmonary arterial hypertension, there are drugs studied, new drugs that show promise. There's a brand new class of drugs made available in 2023. It's called sotatercept, that has shown great promise in reversing the progression of the disease. So it's still very early. We have to see the long-term effects of these medications, but there are new things coming into the field. And then in terms of group 3 or pulmonary hypertension related to ILD, I mentioned earlier, there's a new medication available that was approved in 2022. Before that, there was nothing. The only thing we had was oxygen and that take care of the underlying lung disease to treat this problem, but now there's a medication available. In terms of heart failure, since the main treatment is taking care of the heart failure, any advancements, the new technologies or procedures we have for valves, especially the tricuspid valve, the mitral valve, will help in the management of these patients.
With the exception of like the embolism treatment, which is harrowing to contemplate, but would correct the situation. If you're diagnosed with pulmonary hypertension and it's got to be managed, it's got to be treated, it's not going to be reversed. It's a question of management and preventing progression or slowing it down. Are you living well with it if it's well managed?
Yes, yes. Patients can have a decent quality of life. And decent, I mean, they're able to perform their daily activities, go shopping. Obviously, it's never going to be the same. If someone has a lung disease and they need to be on oxygen 24/7, that will affect the way they see themselves, their appearance. Sometimes patients are self-conscious about that and don't want to use the oxygen, but that is not doing any good to their condition. So there are going to be changes. But if someone has a type of pulmonary hypertension that doesn't require oxygen and is detected early, it can be managed and patients can have a good quality of life. They can have a good exercise tolerance, meaning be able to perform moderate, even more than moderate exertion without having any significant limitation.
That's Deborah cardiologist Dr. Juarez Rojas Marte. Join us next month when we look at another health issue that could impact you or someone you care about. As always, it'll be available the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.